Low-wage workers have lost the most ground during this public health emergency. I'm David Brancaccio. Low-wage workers are losing ground in this terrible year we've just had. That's one of the key takeaways in Amnesty International's latest annual report on what they call the state of the world's human rights, Marketplace's Samantha Fields reports.
It's the same story in much of the world. The people who make the least have been hit the hardest by the pandemic. And, says Netsanit Belai at Amnesty International,
in many countries, those working in the gig economy, those working as cleaners, seasonal workers, were completely left out of any relief package introduced by governments.
And Belai says that has exacerbated income inequality around the world. In the U.S., low-wage workers have also lost the most in the pandemic, says Molly Kinder at the Brookings Institution. But
there has been a robust policy response to try to extend a safety net to workers with the least. Typically, our safety net does not catch these gig workers, but in this pandemic recession, there was a very careful effort to include them.
Still, the pandemic has exacerbated extreme inequities in the U.S. That, Kinder says, will require more permanent solutions. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
We're also reporting today on a Gallup survey that finds the quality of jobs got worse for 40% of Americans. COVID safety, access to sick leave, chances of being laid off, a smaller percentage, about a third, report the jobs got better. Amazon, one of the largest retailers in the country, has endorsed President Biden's corporate tax hike. That's part of an infrastructure overhaul. Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos had faced criticism from the White House, congressional leaders, and on social media for paying very little U.S. federal income tax. Marketplace's Erica Barris joins us with some details.
In a blog post, Jeff Bezos said Amazon supports the Biden administration's focus on investing in American infrastructure. Biden's $2.3 trillion plan focuses on fixing roads, expanding broadband internet access, and boosting funding for research. The bill proposes raising the corporate tax rate from 21 to 28%. It would also close loopholes that allow companies to move profits overseas. Last week, President Biden said Amazon was one of nearly 100 companies that use various loopholes to avoid paying federal income tax. Middle-class families usually pay over 20% in tax rates. Amazon did over $386 billion in sales last year. The company, which has profited heavily during the pandemic as even more people shifted to e-commerce, has also been under fire for workplace practices. And a union vote is currently underway that will decide if workers at an Amazon warehouse in Alabama will be union. I'm Erica Barris for Marketplace.
The chairman and CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase, the biggest of banks, said in his annual letter to shareholders out this morning that the economy is set up for success, given vaccines, given infrastructure spending, and more. Many Wednesdays, we consult Susan Schmidt in Chicago. Susan is head of U.S. equities at Aviva Investors. Good morning.
Good morning.
All right. When a big mocker, as my grandmother would say, like Jamie Dimon, says Goldilocks, not too hot, not too cold. What does it mean to you?
Comments like that imply that he thinks we're moving to a almost perfect setup for the economy with slow, steady growth and a nice, solid recovery. When you have slow, steady growth, you can also have interest rates going up in a slow, steady fashion. That's actually a great operating environment for companies. And it's a time when the market tends to do well.
You think he's off the deep end with a prediction like this?
I think he's optimistic, but I also think that he is looking at what we've done in terms of stimulus and how positive consumer confidence is right now. And as he's looking forward, I think he's actually not that far off.
And even though market professionals like to listen to the Jamie Dimons of the world, we should remind ourselves that no mortal has a hotline to the future, right, Susan? You never know.
That's right. There's no crystal ball here. It's purely expectations, but economic data has been strong, and looking forward, people feel like the economy is getting back on track.
All right. Susan Schmidt, out of the Chicago office of Aviva Investors, head of U.S. equities. Thank you.
Thank you.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
Now to a syrupy feature story. I could also say sappy, but both words leave the wrong impression. About 70% of the global maple syrup supply comes from the Canadian province of Quebec. The thing to do in the spring is to go to a sugar shack there for a traditional meal with maple syrup incorporated into every course, but pandemic. 40 of the province's 200 sugar shacks have closed for good. I put that at 20%. To sustain a French-Canadian institution, there's an initiative to do these meals takeout style. Here's reporter Emma Jacobs.
The Courcy family normally visits a sugar shack every spring. They eat traditional foods, including maple syrup frozen over snow. Usually, they'll sit at long indoor communal tables and listen to live fiddle music. But this year, they're picking up boxed meals to eat at home. To be supportive, say the adults, Etienne and Julie. Sugar shacks already had a challenging business model pre-pandemic. They only open for a month or two at the start of sugaring season in early spring. So the pandemic arrived at the worst possible time last year, says Daniel Laurent. He and his wife are the fourth generation running this sugar shack, Le Chalet des Érables.
Everything was ready, fridge, you know, we're full of meat. And all of a sudden, the government asked us to shut down our business.
Laurent says their maple sap harvest makes up only a fraction of annual revenue.
We're talking about $30,000 a year. Just my insurance premium costs me $100,000 a year.
So the meal's key. In a normal season, they serve 1,500 a day. This year, Laurent's daughter proposed takeout meals and organized dozens of sugar shacks to join in. Customers order meals online to pick up either on site or from one of the province's largest supermarket chains, which is giving all revenues back to the sugar shacks. Quebec food historian Natalie Cook says she's not surprised by the support she's seen for the sugar shacks campaign.
We don't think of them as businesses. We think of them as part of the community.
She says her friends are sharing pictures of their meals on social media,
saying, wow, look what I've got. This is great. I scored. But you're going to lose the sense of interaction and cultural celebration.
The kind of cultural experiences the sugar shack owners say they hope to provide again, as long as the online orders keep them going until customers can come back next season in person. In Montreal, I'm Emma Jacobs for Marketplace.
And I'm David Brancaccio, Marketplace Morning Report. We are from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.